This is John Udell. My guest for today's podcast is Partha Sundaram. He works on something which is known externally as the Customer Experience Improvement Program and internally as SQM or SQIM. We talked about how SQIM was used historically to instrument software on a per-application basis and about how it's now being used to instrument the Vista operating system itself. John Udell?
Hi, this is Partha.
Hi, how you doing? We wanted to get together to talk about SQM, which stands for Software Quality Metrics.
Right.
A system that not much is known about, apparently. I couldn't find much information on it. The way that I got to even know about it was a discussion with Scott Dart, in which he told me that through SQM, the photo gallery team knows a lot more about how people are using the photo gallery app, in particular how they're using tagging, than they would have otherwise been able to know. I thought that was really interesting. But as I understand it, it's a new piece of Windows infrastructure in Vista. Is that correct?
SQIM is a technology which has been around. It's a Microsoft internal-only technology.
Yeah?
And that's why there's less public information about it.
You pronounce it SQIM?
Yeah, SQIM.
Okay.
And it's been around for 5 years, and Vista is the first release of Windows where SQIM is inbuilt into the OS.
Okay.
But lots of apps have been using it for over 5 years. Office has had two releases in which they've used SQIM, and they've made significant product improvements based on the data they've gotten.
Okay.
And almost every major product team within Microsoft does use SQIM in some capacity.
Okay. So maybe we should back up and talk through the history of this a little bit. So it emerged, you're saying, two releases of Office and 5 years ago.
SQIM was born in MSN.
Okay.
5 to 7 years ago, when MSN Explorer first released, the MSN folks were interested in understanding how people are configuring or how they're using the MSN Explorer tool. So they got a lot of feedback from the general community that you could use MSN Explorer to sign up for your internet connection.
Yeah.
And they heard that there were a large number of failures before they could actually connect through.
Right.
So one of the first data points that the folks added with SQIM was, how long was the user taking to finish sign up? And they found that the average user took about 35 to 40 minutes to complete signing up for the internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
However, what MSN Explorer did was that it was timing out its session in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The feature team was expecting that most people would finish signing up for an internet connection. There were only four wizards.
Yeah.
People would be done in under 20 minutes.
So you're just shutting them down in the midstream?
Correct. So actually, people are not signing up, not because they are not interested in the product, but because they are being timed out.
So as a technology, how would you describe this? It's some sort of a monitor, an event monitor, I gather. But how would you characterize it?
We refer to SQIM as the Nielsen box for software.
The which box?
The Nielsen box, for TV ratings.
Oh, okay, Nielsen, yeah.
SQIM is a general purpose mechanism for collecting and aggregating any data from software. And usually it's event-based data, user-driven events.
Yeah.
But the scope of SQIM has moved from purely usage metrics to configuration and quality metrics over time.
So how do you define a configuration and quality metric?
Let me just walk you through examples.
Okay.
Historically, right, usage, for example, in Office, how frequently do people use undo in a particular feature?
Mm-hmm.
On which menu items are users clicking most often? How many notifications are we throwing on the average to users?
Okay.
And so on. Those are standard usage metrics.
Okay. We should, I think, upfront here, make very explicit how much information is collected, how the information is relayed back to the mothership, what level of anonymization and aggregation is going on.
I'll first walk you through what I mean by quality and configuration, and then I'll talk about what our data collection mechanism is.
Okay.
Okay, so configuration is, for example, what is the most common processor speed? Right?
Yeah.
Or what is the OS version? How much memory does the computer have?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And quality metrics are essentially how long does it take before the app crashes? How long is the application running before it crashes? That's a very powerful metric, actually, mean time to crash.
I agree. It's just an interesting definition of quality.
Take a product like IE, right? Historically, we know that add-ons could cause a lot of quality issues to IE, right?
Right.
How do you go about identifying which add-on is the most problematic? So you could think of taking a snapshot of IE at the time it crashes and look at all the add-ons it contains.
Right.
And then look at the mean time to crash and look at which add-ons are most responsible for deteriorating the mean time to crash.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of quality metrics. From the data collection, the interesting that's a very good question, actually, which you asked. One of the guarantees we make with the SQIM privacy statement is that we collect anonymous data. And this has been a pretty easy guarantee. Historically, what we've done is we've only collected integers. So all we collect is counts.
I'll bet that the vast majority of people have never heard of SQIM, right, and probably don't know that for some years now, there has been even an anonymized process of data collection going on. How would someone who simply buys and uses Microsoft Office even know about that in the first place?
So we are an opt-in technology. We ask consent upfront to the user. Our external name, the name under which the world knows us, is Customer Experience Improvement Program.
Okay.
So we have a privacy statement around that, and lawyers have been working with the privacy community to educate them about what this program is and how data is collected and what kinds of data we collect.
And over the past several iterations of Office, at what point in the process of installing and using the products has that program been presented to people?
Usually at setup.
Is it always presented, or is it just only some people that see it?
It's always presented.
Oh, okay.
We don't nag users repeatedly. It's off at setup time once you install, say, Office.
Okay, so if I walk up to a system, so for example, I'm looking at a system on which I've freshly installed Vista and Office. Now, these were DVDs that I actually got at Microsoft, and so it may be that the SQIM stuff was turned on by default. In my case, I'm not sure. But in any event, how can I walk up to the system and find out what the state of its SQIM switch is? Where would I look?
If you have Outlook running,
yeah,
you can go to Help.
Yeah.
Privacy options.
Okay.
There'll be four checkboxes. The first one will be search Microsoft Office Online, and the fourth one would be sign up for the Customer Experience Improvement Program. You see that?
Yeah, I do. If it's checked, which it is, that means that I have opted in?
Correct.
Okay. And if I uncheck it, and then obviously I opt out?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. And what percentage, do you have an idea of what percentage of people end up opting in?
So it varies quite a bit across each product.
Right.
And that's because we have, like, such a huge range of products and like different level of confidence in opting in. But anecdotally, we believe that Office's consent rate is about 10%.
Okay.
It would be much lower for Windows. We expect between 2 to 5%.
For Windows as a whole?
Yeah, for Vista.
In Vista, where do I see the option?
So in Vista, you will get a notification 3 days after you've used the machine. Once you've done setting up your machine and done with your high priority tasks,
yeah,
we throw a notification. So if you're a North American user, you'll be opted in by group policy.
Yeah.
So we throw this notification, and it's a dialogue which the user can consent into. Mm-hmm. But you can also go into the control panel.
Yeah, yeah, that's where I'm looking now too.
So bring up the control panel, look at system and maintenance,
mm-hmm,
and look at problem reports and solutions.
Okay.
And problem reports and solutions.
Okay.
And once you open up that panel, on the left side at the bottom, there's a customer experience improvement setting.
Ah, okay. So as you said, this is the first appearance of this technology as an operating system component rather than a per application kind of thing?
Yes.
How is it being used in Vista then?
One of the big goals in Vista, right, was to just get a presence and focus on really high-level metrics this
mm-hmm
time around
mm-hmm
and big bets. Some of the big bets we are making. So like in Vista, we're essentially using it for, you can think of it for two major categories. One is pre-release metrics, and one is post-release metrics.
Okay.
What I mean by pre-release metrics is on a build-by-build basis, we want to understand the quality of some of our major components.
Mm-hmm.
So to give you two specific examples, one is Vista Setup. So Vista Setup uses SQIM to find out the distribution of successes, failures, and cancellations of setup
mm-hmm
per build basis.
Mm-hmm.
So what the central setup war team does is before they sign off on the quality of a particular build, what they do is they measure these metrics. There are various ways in which you can install Vista, right? You can install it through the network, you can install through DVD, and you can do an upgrade,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have goals around each of these modes, and on a per build basis, they ensure that they meet each of these goals.
Okay.
And if they don't, they have additional instrumentation which identifies the set of soft failures which occurred during setup.
Okay.
So historically, right, Windows has been very good for very hard failures. We've had Watson data for all our hard failures.
Okay.
If we experience a crash, a blue screen, or any major failure event, we have Watson data, we have CABs, and so on. Now, what happens is, for things like setup, there are a sequence of soft failures which eventually lead to failure of setup. And it isn't a hard failure, but it just doesn't complete anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So what the setup team does is they instrument all their soft failures, and they figure out from aggregated data on the back end what set of soft failures contributed to increased failures or cancellations for a particular build of Vista.
Okay. Now, this data is collected and stored locally and is also relayed to Microsoft over the network, right?
QIM in Vista is built on top of an infrastructure called ETW, which is called Event Tracing for Windows.
Okay.
It's an extremely lightweight infrastructure. One ETW call is about 1,000 machine cycles, which is
mm-hmm.
pretty negligible.
Mm-hmm.
These events are post-processed once a day, and they are uploaded to Microsoft once a day.
Where are they stored locally?
They're stored in... do you want the exact location? Or?
Yeah, I'd be curious.
It's stored in Program Data, Microsoft, Windows, Squim, Upload.
Okay. And once it's been uploaded, is it purged from the local machine?
Yes, it is deleted as soon as we upload it.
Oh, okay. Now, you talked about instrumentation. Is the instrumentation that's in a shipping Vista system a constant, or is it the kind of thing that can be adjusted over the life of the installation? In other words, could Microsoft or could potentially me decide to collect more information or different information?
So today it is static. Squim data is static. So unless a new release comes out, we won't have new data points.
Okay.
But for Windows 7, we are investigating a dynamic infrastructure. So one of the big requirements has been that teams internally, before release, want to capture much more than they want to externally.
Right.
So we are thinking of building some sort of infrastructure which allows you to dynamically collect data points.
What's the relationship, if any, between the Squim interceptor that's built into Vista and the one that's in, say, Office?
So building a Squim infrastructure in Windows is a huge challenge. For applications in user mode, it's fairly easy. Like, you have access to state in a very reliable way, and you don't have some of the technical challenges you have in Windows. For example, so in Windows, we need to satisfy components across multiple layers, kernel mode and user mode,
mm-hmm.
and services, different security contexts. In the case of Office, all they do is they load a DLL,
mm-hmm.
which we provide, which basically all the DLL does is allows you to author a Squim file.
Okay.
But in Windows, what we've done is we've built on top of ETW so that very low-level components can also use us.
Okay.
In Squim, one of the fundamental concepts is a session, which is the span between which you want to analyze data.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the session for Office is Office application start to Office application end.
Okay.
But for Windows, it's much more complicated. We are interested in things like machine startup to machine boot down.
Yeah.
And user log on to user log off.
Okay, so the data collection mechanisms differ, but there is some notion of a standard recording format?
So everyone adheres to just one standard, which is a Squim file.
Okay.
The Squim file has a predefined format, which is a standard header and a binary blob of key-value pairs.
Okay.
And the key-value pairs are data point and value.
Okay. Is that documented anywhere?
We have specs internally, but it's not publicly documented.
Okay, so in principle, there's other than reverse engineering, there's no way that I could read and analyze that information myself?
Not externally. Internally, we provide tools to teams to crack open that file and just view it.
Right. There's a number of issues going on here, and there are some aspects to this which I think would scare people. But at the same time, so for example, as a web developer, I remember once giving a talk on rich internet applications. At the time, the example was Flash, and one of the points that was raised was, well, you actually are giving up an awful lot of visibility when you move away from kind of Web 1.0, where you have the click stream to analyze, and you go to this Flash thing, and it's also actually potentially true for Ajax. You go to this mode of interaction where much more is happening client-side, you know, with potentially less communication to the back end. You wind up having less of an ability to understand how the software is being used, and therefore less of an ability to improve and optimize it. And so actually for a long time, I thought that the notion of instrumenting the rich client in its various manifestations was a very interesting and important idea. One of the questions to ask then is, well, what's been learned as a result of doing this, and what are the specific improvements that we can point to as a result?
It comes down to what is the value proposition for the user to consent into this technology, right? And how are we communicating that back to the user?
That's one question, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Today, we haven't really shared with the user what the major gains have been with consenting into Squim directly, right? I mean, there's no like website where a user can go and say, I just want to know what the value of my data was. Right? And that's one direction we eventually want to go to at some point.
Yeah.
But internally, there has been a huge value for product teams in improving quality. And I can illustrate a few successes during Vista. Some of the big gains have been around finding bugs much sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, one instance was that the power management team. So in Vista, like earlier, right, in XP, it was possible for an app or a service to veto shutdown. Right?
Mm.
With Vista, these vetoes were disabled. With Squim data, what the power management team could see was that only in the hybrid scenario, vetoes were going through.
What's the hybrid scenario?
There's a hybrid scenario now between hibernate and sleep. So what happens is the system maintains a hyber file, and it keeps all your state. And if at any point you lose power completely, then let's say your battery dies, what it does is it the next time the machine boots up, the hyber file contains all your state.
Okay.
So it's able to resume your system to where you were before you had power failure.
Mm-hmm.
But what they were noticing is that in this scenario, vetoes were failing.
Mm-hmm.
And they found this through Squim data, and they were able to isolate their bug much sooner. In the case of the Fix team, right, they learned that the large percentage of their photos were stored outside of user profile.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the biggest and the most visible gains for Squim and Vista was the Lua or UAC. With Vista, we have instrumentation figuring out how often a user sees a prompt.
Mm-hmm.
And we have goals around the fact that, you know, like when they set up their machine, initially they should see a large number of prompts. We expect that, but over time these prompts go down.
Right.
So the Lua team during tech beta, they learned that 40% of users don't see a prompt after 10 days of hosting the machine.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty big number, and that was essential in order to even release Vista. For this round of Vista, we focused on like big bets and large scenarios, right? Things which we are concerned about, and we haven't like gone through and like instrumented all over the place.
Right.
But these are some critical gains we've had internally, and which have made Squim like pretty critical as part of the Vista development process.
Right.
Sharing it out to the end user, I think eventually like the goal would be like, you know, we publish data on a highly visible portal which says this is what we learned from Vista Squim.
Here's another take on this. I was speaking with Mary Sherwinski, who's in Microsoft Research. One of the things she was talking about was their use of what sounds like an analogous but different kind of logging tool, which I think she called Vibe.
Okay.
Do you know of this?
I think Vibe Logger is to find out all the windowing properties, right?
I'll give you an example of the kind of thing that Mary told me she has used it for personally, which was to look at the amount of time that she spends in email. And she set a personal goal to reduce that amount of time because she got pissed off that it was, you know, 60 or 65% of her day. That was a really good example of the kind of thing that she might want to, or you might want to, or I might want to, or anyone might want to do, which is understand our own personal use of the software and make some decisions about how we might want to change either its behavior or our behavior, depending on the data that we get back. So it's a potentially a tool for not just improvement of the software, but improvement of the sophistication of our use of the software. Another example of that comes from the photo gallery case where, so Scott, for example, told me that one very important thing that they have learned through this anonymized reporting of data about the use of photo gallery is that they've made a big bet on tagging. And in fact, they can see that a significant number of people are indeed tagging their photos. And so that's a very important thing for them to know. On the other hand, there's no specific information about the tags themselves, right? The tag vocabulary. And it's appropriate that there isn't because that would arguably violate privacy. But from my perspective, I would have a keen interest in understanding the evolution of my tag vocabulary over time. I would equally have a keen interest in being able to compare my tag vocabularies with other people's tag vocabularies. I mean, this happens very naturally on the web in tag-oriented sites like Flickr and Delicious, right? Where, in fact, the tagging is a community activity. So, and this actually, I argue, becomes pretty strategic because what, at least from my point of view, wants to happen here is that we want the sorts of tagging that people do on the desktop to be able to cooperate with the tag vocabularies that are being developed on the web. So, you know, it would be actually extremely interesting for me to be able to start asking questions of the system. You know, what is the frequency with which I use this or that term? And when I change things, what do I change them to? And, you know, and can I take that information and voluntarily pool it with other people's information?
That's a great idea for a feature. I'll tell you a real metric which we have, which might be interesting, is boot time.
Uh-huh.
We collect how long the user takes to boot each time they boot.
Yeah.
So it would be very interesting for you to compare for your hardware configuration how well you do in comparison to all the users in the world.
Yes.
It's a great idea. And as I said, Squim in Windows is an absolutely new initiative. And there have been teams which have surfaced some of this data independent of Squim. They have surfaced this data to users. One example is if you go into the control panel and look at reliability and performance monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So basically that data is also Squimmed back. They give you a reliability index and they show you what the reliability of your machine is over time and in respect to unexpected shutdowns and application installs and patch updates and so on.
What part of the control panel is that in?
Actually, if you can go to, let me see. I usually just search for a reliability monitor.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out to the search, if you just type in reliability, it should show you reliability and performance monitor.
It does.
If you click, once that comes up, under monitoring tools node,
yeah,
there's a reliability monitor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? So if you see, it gives you a graph of your reliability over time.
Uh-huh.
And in respect to patches and updates you made, right? And it assigns you an index accordingly. This team also squims back this data, right?
Yeah.
So we have an idea. And what you said was fairly interesting, and we've thought about this a little bit, is how do I compare my reliability with other 32-bit Vista Ultimate users?
This is extremely interesting. I hadn't seen this before. And in fact, what I'm looking at here, again, this is a relatively new installation of Vista, and the reliability went sharply down on a certain day. And I can see very clearly that the reason that it did so is that I'm on that day and from that day forward running a beta version of an application, which has in fact been crashing. So it's actually quite a graphical representation of the reliability impact of adding that application to the mix.
It's a little hard to put in all this logic inside the product over time. One of the things we've been thinking of is to publish all the Squim data to the world and also let users look at their own through Passport or something, you know?
That's one piece of it. I suppose the other piece of it, though, is, again, that you have to formulate questions to ask of the data. In order to then ask those questions, you have to create instrumentation. And this gets back to this to your earlier point about being able to dynamically conjure up the instrumentation. So I gather that would not be possible today. So, for example, even if I had access to the Squim subsystem, if I wanted to ask questions about my tag vocabularies, I couldn't necessarily do that unless I added my own instrumentation.
You really need to understand two things. One is what question to ask.
Right.
And the second thing is exactly what state will answer that question.
Yeah.
It's possible that all the pieces of state which you're interested in are being collected today.
Right.
But is that the full set? That's the hard part, even for teams internally, right?
Right.
One of our big motivations for building some sort of dynamic data collection is that teams, when they go and ask these questions initially, they always have incomplete answers
mm-hmm.
at the end of one release, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what our philosophy moving forward now is the team defines everything which is interesting, and they collect only 1% of that state. And based on that 1%, if they feel they need to ask some more questions or need additional pieces of data, they can ask from the server,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So we want to move towards that model at some point.
So what would it look like from a developer's perspective, and never mind whether this is now an internal developer or a third-party developer or indeed even an end user through some sort of an assistant, what does it look like to define a probe for, you know, some event pattern?
The biggest role in Squim is played by the PM or the data analyst, actually. And that comes down to defining the questions. The developer has a very small role in Squim. And that role is essentially collecting the piece of data which is necessary to answer the business question.
Yeah.
Right. So the typical process someone follows here and follows within Microsoft to collect some SQL data is that they define their business question up front.
Yeah.
And they also visualize how they would make decisions based on the data they collect. And then the next step is to identify the set of data points that are essential for answering that question. And then the next step is to define the analysis context, which is the session.
What would the different sources be? I mean, obviously there's an event stream, right? There's in Windows level events, there's stuff happening in the file system. I mean, is it really just a pragmatic kind of exercise in which you reach into one or multiple of those sources as necessary?
Yeah, I mean, we are like source agnostic. The source might manifest itself. The source of data might manifest itself in different ways. From the SQL perspective, we encourage teams to focus at very high-level metrics, right? And let me walk you through an example which we had in the past. So you've seen the error reporting dialogue, right?
Yeah.
Send, don't send error reports in XP.
Yeah.
One of the theories which someone had is most of the people think that this dialogue is annoying, right? And they click don't send all the time. Right? But we never had data on, you know, how many people were doing this. Or we didn't have data on whether people found error reporting useful. One of the big hidden features in XP error reporting was that once you sent an error report, there'll be a final dialogue which says, thank you for sending your report, and there'll be a small hyperlink at the bottom. And that hyperlink actually was a response from Microsoft for the problem you encountered. Right? Yeah, so you didn't know about that, right?
No, well, I'm sure hardly anyone did.
Hardly anyone did. So one of the things we added was, I think the office team added was, how often do people click send? How often do people click don't send? And how often did people click on the hyperlink? So it's a pretty high-level data. The button information came from the dialogue, and the hyperlink information also came from the dialogue. The Z order of the dialogue came from shell. So it doesn't matter what the source of that event is. Right?
Right.
All we require the developer is to encapsulate all that into a SQL format, which is a data point, which is a D word.
Okay.
So we are source agnostic. Like, we understand that data might live in different places. It might be in registry. It might be in event log. It might be in the memory of the process, which is instrumenting.
If you approach this from the perspective that you want to more and more enable really arbitrary questions to be asked and answered, then I think that that moves you in the direction of trying to normalize the way in which events occur in applications, you know, such that people can declaratively hook into them and collect those events, right? In other words, if I ask the question, how much time am I spending in an email? Or if I ask the question, what is the tag vocabulary that I am evolving look like, right? Then it feels to me, not knowing the internals of this, you know, that at some point, probably already in the existing stream of application events, I'm going to be able to find the place where I hook the kinds of data points that I'm going to want to collect in order to answer those questions.
I mean, that's a great point, and we already been doing that. Like, what in the SQL world, we name those as verticals. One example of a vertical that shipped in Vista is called Windows Message Reporting.
Okay.
For every piece of dialogue which the user is presented, we keep a count of how often that dialogue is presented. And internally, we also know what that text is, right? So before Vista shipped, we looked at the top 1,000 messages which are displayed to users, and we had the UA team reviewing the text to ensure that it wasn't reviewing the text in multiple languages.
Right.
To ensure that there wasn't, you know, that embarrassing piece of text which always comes up in the press, right? Didn't want to hit any of those scenarios before we shipped, right?
Yeah.
So that's a classic example of a vertical. Like, not every single developer in Windows needs to go and instrument their dialogue.
Yes.
In addition, we also collect information of whether they dismissed the dialogue or they accepted the action.
And what about the data that flows through the dialogue?
What do you mean?
So, for example, an operation in PhotoGallery is I want to rename this tag to that tag. So you have, I guess, the ability to see that potentially that the dialogue came up, but do you also have a natural way of collecting what the tag was before and after I renamed it?
No, we don't. One of the disadvantages of building a generic infrastructure is you lose the specifics. The kind of business question you're trying to answer from the generic data collection is much higher than the scope of PIX.
Right.
The business question we're answering is, what is the user experience of Windows in terms of dialogues, right?
Right.
But for that specific business question, that's a zoom-in, zoom-out effect of building a generic vertical, right?
So how would you then, if you decided that it was important to capture that information, how would you do it?
If the PIX team was interested in knowing that how tags were renamed, right?
Yes.
Then every time a tag was renamed, there's probably a hook in the product.
Right.
Somebody would record, it depends what they were interested in. Were they interested in how often it was renamed? Right, then we would maintain a simple counter of how often a tag was renamed.
Mm-hmm.
We can't collect what it was renamed to because it's free-flowing text and we don't collect that. But it's still useful to know that tags were renamed n number of times in a session.
Right.
All you need is a hook into that state, right? There are lots of pieces of state in Windows which are not accessible in any way,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And we just can't collect that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a programmatic way to collect it. Squim can collect it.
Okay. So the answer is that if the photo gallery team wanted to make available, even, for example, just to me, to the user, the ability to review my tag vocabulary and its evolution over time, then that would be, you know, the instrumentation to do that would just be over and above any of this infrastructure that we've already been talking about.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a very specific scenario, which, if that is very valuable to the overall user community, and for me it would be, but then the PIX team would need to build some UI which exposes that.
Okay. Okay, and it would likely be collected and stored using a different mechanism as well.
Right. I mean, so one of the things with Squim is that you collect only what you need and what you're going to upload back to Microsoft.
Right.
Like, don't collect what you don't need.
Right.
And that's a big push, actually. Like, you know, one of the things which quickly became a problem is how much data we're going to upload.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that's has been one of our big focuses before Vista. It was driving back to the business question. Right.
Yeah.
And if you don't need something, don't penalize the user, don't penalize the network, right?
Yeah, yeah.
By collecting data.
Okay. Any other points that you wanted to raise? This has been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Squim is a growing technology for Windows 7. We want to, like, continue focusing on privacy, the amount of data collected, and also having some sort of dynamic infrastructure to not collect items which we don't need anymore,
mm-hmm.
right? And we also want to become more transparent. We understand, you know, you raised a couple of good points about how much we are giving back to the user in terms of value proposition. So those are areas we want to continue to invest in. And hopefully in a couple of years, you'll be able to build those funky reports that you're talking about, mm-hmm. comparing your boot time to the world's boot time, right?
Well, I wouldn't care about that, but it'd be a lot of other things I would care about. Thanks, Partha. This was informative.
Thank you for talking. If you need any additional information, please let me know.
Okay, thanks. Take care.